Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. On today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about young cores in the NBA, where the Cavs maybe fall in that hierarchy, and what they can learn from other teams. Plus, I talked with Mark King, the host of Locked On Grizzlies, about Friday's Cavs-Grizzlies games. The Cavs play Memphis on Friday, Chicago on Saturday to wrap up this road trip. We'll talk about all that over on Monday as well, getting into the full weekend of games. But this is Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, Evan, how's it going? You wrote a piece about Miles Turner, someone the Cavs could trade for if they can't extend interest. And today people can find that in the show notes below. I think we can maybe get around to talking about something like that closer to the deadline. But how is your just day on the internet? It doesn't seem like it's been the most fun.
It's internet 101 not to engage with people that are just attacking you from all fronts. But it's okay. I love Pacers fans. I love all of you guys so much. And this is just a blanket statement because I started tweeting it at first and then I got burnt out after like a few responses. Thank you so much for taking the time to read my article, and your clicks are being tracked on their internal database. And at the end of the day, we may disagree on opinions, but that's okay. That's the beauty of sports, because we're all fans at the end. So, you know what? In all honesty, though, no, it just sucked because my phone was going absolutely nuclear. My watch was going off at 1.2.
Wait. You have Twitter notifications on?
I mean, yes.
Why? Oh, my God. I don't have Twitter on my phone like half the time. And like, if it's on my phone, I never have notifications on.
Well, I do engage. Like, I interact with you. I interact with people and like, the small Cavs Twitter community that I do interact with. And like, I usually have pleasant experiences most of the time. And then I forget that I should just close the floodgates when I ever have an opinion on something. But you know what? Maybe it's a rookie mistake. I'm still learning. I'm just a baby in this big, crazy world, I guess.
And the Twitter in itself is just an insane place. Oh,
it's a beautiful application.
That's fun with putting it. So what we're going to talk about, as mentioned on the intro to the show, is the young cores. The Cavs obviously think are a team that has a young core. We've identified a couple teams we think are either, you know, I wouldn't, ahead is probably the correct word, but I think the Cavs could at least learn something from. But Evan, before we do that, I think it's just for me, when I look at the Cavs core, which is when you would say Sexton, Garland, Kevin Porter Jr., you could lump Jetty in there, Dylan Windler's obviously in there. I don't include Ante Zizic in that because his future with the franchise is just so unclear at this point. You know, it's been written about in The Athletic. It's been written about some other places that have evaluated sort of the young groups of players. But I think the Cavs, there's potential there, but I feel like it's just so unknown at this point. It's very hard for me to sort of rate it in any meaningful way.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And a good call on not including Zizek in that grouping there, because I think you and I are both firmly of the school of thought that he will not be in Cleveland or possibly the NBA. Shout out to Baby Shaq. For next season, which it sucks, but that it is what it is. But no, Darius Garland, Kevin Porter, Dylan Windler, Colin Sexton, Jetty Osman, I'd consider those guys, yeah, part of the young core. And I think if you want to compare it to the grand scheme of things for some of the other young cores we're talking about, a lot of them are singles right now. I mean, we don't know what we have, and not like a home run player. Like, this guy is going to be a franchise altering player. Like, let's spoil one of the cores, like Ja Morant. You're not going to, like, none of these players are Ja at this level right now, but they're all solid and logical picks. And like the Kevin Porter one, we're both really high on. Darius Garland is starting to turn the corner. Dylan Windler is a bit of a mystery box because we won't see him until possibly the earliest, probably summer league at this point. And even then, the Cavs might not let him play. And then, I mean, Jetty is a overall solid player, but I've kind of been in the camp where if you're finalizing your roster, I don't know if Jetty could be a starting small forward for the Cavaliers. He could be better utilized as a high-energy guy off the bench for you, which is always a great thing to have because he can score in bunches and provide a lot offensively. But no, it's just, it feels like the Cavs are building the foundation of the young core, kind of feeling things out for them, and they don't necessarily have like that franchise altering talent or that franchise player on their roster yet, which, you know, beggars can't be choosers. Last time the Cavs went through a rebuild, they landed Kyrie Irving, who ended up being the real deal. And then they had Andrew Wiggins and Anthony Bennett, and then, you know, our guy Deion Waiters. But a lot of those pieces got shipped to build that championship squad. But once you land that one guy, that makes the rest of the young core a lot more palatable. And I think the Cavs just have a solid foundation going. They're just waiting for that opportunity to land the guy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think to name the teams, I think we both agreed Memphis and Atlanta, and then I said New Orleans, and I think you would agree that as well. I think what you identified correctly, what those teams all have differently than the Cavs, that's they have their transcendent guys. So Memphis, you know, they have Ja, they have Jaren Jackson Jr. I think those are both two guys that I would say are ahead of the Cavs' best young player. I think you look at Atlanta, you know, I have concerns about some of their peripheral guys. Like, I think there is a lot still to figure out with the rest of their roster, but John Collins is pretty good. And Trae Young is obviously a franchise guy. You know, defensive concerns for him aside, the guy's already a very good scorer, came into the NBA as a very good passer. That's a very, very good player. Someone, I think if he would have been there at 8 for the Cavs, they would have taken him. I know they really liked him during the draft process. But they end up with Colin Sexton, who has, you know, been good in his own ways. And you look at New Orleans, it's obviously they have Zion, and that guy is going to change the league. He could come back and, you know, go nuclear, win the rookie of the year or whatever, but that's already a very good player. But they have Lonzo, who, you know, I think has gotten a little bit more maligned than he needs to. Kind of a quirky player, but a good player. Brandon Ingram has obviously blossomed this year. Jackson Hayes does fun stuff. Nico Melli does young stuff. I don't know how old he is, but he's new to the NBA at least. Nikhil Alexander Walker was a pick a lot of draft people liked, and Josh Hart is just like kind of a solid quality younger NBA player. I think I was going to rank those three. I think you got to go New Orleans first just because of Zion. Memphis, Memphis is the one that I'm most intrigued by. I do some writing about them for Forbes, and I wrote about DeAnthony Melton on Thursday, but who's one of their young guys. But you look at their roster; they have Ja, who like is incredible. Jaren Jackson Jr. incredible. And they've just kind of surrounded the rest of those guys with sort of interesting little young pieces that are pretty affordable and they can do interesting stuff with. They obviously have some financial considerations going forward, but I think to circle back here, I think it's just right that you have identified that the Cavs don't have the guy to sort of lead their young core in a way these other teams do. And I think that's what makes the 2020 draft so interesting, is that I don't pretend to know enough about the draft, and we're going to get Trevor Magnani on here back again soon, but like, you know, I don't know. I feel like for the Cavs, I feel like if you're thinking about them, considering like who should be like what they're hoping to get, I think if you're looking to succeed in that next draft, I think you're trying to find your guy who could be your type of player in that regard. You're hoping to find your guy who can be your franchise guy. And I don't know who that is. I don't know if that's Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball or you know, Killian Hayes from who's a French 6'8" guard, or Onyeka Okongwu from USC. Like, there's a bunch of guys. I don't know enough about them to say, but I think that we're in a position where the Cavs are going to, if depending on where they pick, that's gonna, I think, going to be what they're looking for. And I think until they find it, that is going to be what they're looking for.
No, I'd agree with that. And just to touch back on your point before, I kind of raised my eyebrows doing the math. You said Nico Melli, he's a rookie. He is 2 years older than me, so he is going to turn 29 in a few days.
Look, I am 26. I shouts to my people finding their grooves in their late 30s, in their late 20s. That's extremely my vibe.
You know, I agree, and like. No, you're absolutely right. New Orleans has Zion, and they have really good, just complimentary players like Lonzo Ball. And, Josh Hart's not terrible. He's a solid piece as well. But, like, no, Brandon Ingram's really blossomed into something as well. And when the Cavs didn't offer him a contract extension or anything like that, I was just thinking, or not the Cavs, the Pelicans didn't offer him one. I was thinking that could be a guy the Cavs target. But then, you know, he had a good start to his year in New Orleans. And then, yeah, Trey and Atlanta, like, they have a lot of good complimentary pieces. I do have concerns, like you do, I'm sure, about some of them. But, like, Trey and John Collins is a good duo. And just to jump back to your final point, like, yeah, I don't know. The draft is kind of a crapshoot this year. I've talked to Trevor a little bit about it, and he said that it's outside of Anthony Edwards, it's kind of underwhelming across the board, so just don't get too excited about it, which is fair. It might be like the Cavs just hit another single player, they get another solid complimentary piece just to kind of like add to this foundation, and then
whether it's through a trade if a young player is, because, you know, player movement these days, people are already speculating when Zion was getting out of New Orleans. Maybe there will be a young player for God knows what reason wants to come to Cleveland. Just that happens that way, but I'm not sure if this draft class has that star player outside of Anthony Edwards, because I've watched a little bit of his film and I've watched just him live in action, and he's a little polarizing, because sometimes like he can completely just not show up, and then there's other times where he's obviously the best player like on the floor, and then like he's exciting to watch. So I don't know. I feel like the Cavs are just kind of in a weird position right now, because last year's draft class would have been the golden opportunity with Ja, with Zion, with even RJ Barrett, if you want to. He has a lot of his own lumps, but he had a lot of star potential coming out of Duke. And just if the Cavs are able to land in that top three, top four position, because, I mean, DeAndre Hunter went fourth overall.
Yes.
And so, I mean, he's a good complimentary player in Atlanta as well, but that's apparently a player Cleveland was really high on. But for God knows what reason, if any of those like Ja, Zion, or RJ fell to Cleveland, like that would have been the guy for the Cavs this year. And I mean, Darius Garland's a fine player, and we're still kind of feeling him out a little bit because of just where he's at in like his career and everything. And like, I always keep saying this every single episode at this point, but he's pretty much a high school player playing against grown men, and he's finally getting comfortable. Maybe he could be the guy, but for now it's just, yeah, no, the Cavs just don't have that guy, and I don't know if this year's draft class will have it. And if not, that's fine. Just keep building a nice, young, fun team, and then eventually just hopefully something becomes available so you can just find somebody to compliment and just push this team towards the playoffs and everything else.
Yeah, you can build. I think one of the reasons culture comes up a lot is with the Cavs and with organization in the NBA is that like, you can build, you know, good teams and develop talent and have success without necessarily getting top picks. It's hard. If you can do something where like you're the Heat and you can like, you know, they have to get Jimmy Butler and that raises their floor, but like they did a really good job of developing guys like Bam and guys that came in undrafted and guys that were undervalued and turned them into stuff. Like, you know, say we want about us on the white side, like they pulled him out of obscurity and like made him into a useful player for them for a time. You know, there's obviously other reasons they were successful, but like that, it's part of it, and the Cavs can get more out of Garland or get more out of Sexton or KPJ or whomever. Like that's going to help them, and I think you can sort of build, and then it's you got to just you could get really lucky, and then you see what happens. As we wrap up this first segment here, I don't want a deep analysis on this because we can do that another day. But if you're going to say one guy in the Cavs right now was the guy you would say is most likely, and I just want to name was the most likely to break positive in a way that we're not expecting, who would it be?
Kevin Porter.
I agree. I think it's him. If I was going to rank, I would be him, Garland, and after that, I don't think there's anyone I would consider like a huge breaking point.
A lot of good complimentary guys after that.
Yes, I think that's where we're at. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then come back to talk about some of the lessons we can learn from some of these teams. But before we do that, I want to let you know that today's show is brought to you by the good folks over at MyBookie. Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is a place for you because they let you turn all of your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, the NBA, the start of college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you bet a little bit on just a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. Howard Ratner. Uncut Gems, case in point. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you're tired of watching the game from the couch with nothing to gain, MyBookie wants to help you by getting your mind off everything else and get you back into the game. And if you join right now, they're going to match your deposit halfway all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. So enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate that offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. We'll be right back. Evan, we're back. When you look at other young cores in the league, looking at what other teams have done, is there a team or something you've seen another team do that you would say the Cavs either are doing their own version of or something they could learn from? Is there anything stand out to you in terms of how other teams have approached building up their corner of young group?
Well, if you just want to talk about what not to do, I would not do what the Bulls are doing right now, because I like a lot of the young players on Chicago's roster. I was a big Wendell Carter guy the year the Cavs drafted Sexton. Lauri Markkanen, for whatever reason, just, you know, here's my beef with the Bulls. They have a very modern front court with Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter, but Jim Boylan doesn't want either of them shooting. Well, at least Wendell not shooting three-pointers, and they're just kind of not being properly utilized. And then, I mean, Kobe White was a fun player coming out of this year's draft class. Daniel Gafford, I thought, was a good pick for them. Ryan Arcidiacono, I think, was a late second or even an undrafted player, and like, he's solid for them. Otto Porter, I've always been high on. I mean, if you just want to look further down the list, like, him and Zach LaVine are also there, part of like that quote-unquote young core foundation of theirs, and like, they're the two best players. But then everyone was talking about how the Bulls are probably going to turn the corner, and I think Jim Boylan in this front office has just done such a disservice. And we talked about culture in the last segment. That's what the Cavs are trying to do. I think what Chicago's doing to this roster is the antithesis of culture, because none of these players look like they're having fun playing for this coach, but the coach is 100% safe because the front office backs him in every single way. And I guess that's my thing, where if Cleveland is trying to take a page out of what not to do, don't copy what Chicago's doing. What about you?
I think that's right. I would also say, like, if you look at like the Kings, who I like, they have a lot of young guys that I like, but I like, if Luka Doncic is staring you in the face, don't overthink it. Just like, if they were so worried, like,
oh my God, I forgot, like, about
just take Luka, you know, like, if he's there and you think the generational guy's there, just like, figure it out. Like, you could have made Fox, like, I don't really buy the Fox and Luka thing, like, very much, but like, just figure it out. If that guy's scaring you in the face, don't take like the 90th power forwards. I guess if I'm going to look at a team that, I would say that I really like what they're doing, it's the Grizzlies, because here's their young guys that I think are interesting in different ways outside of Ja and outside of Jaren Jackson Jr. You have Marko Gugurić, who they signed from overseas. He's like 23. You have Brandon Clark, who they drafted with their second first-round pick last year. Grayson Allen, who they got in a trade. Bruno Caboclo, who's not really playing for them, but at least was like a guy they rolled the dice on. Dylan Brooks, who is a little polarizing, but I think a useful NBA player. And then D'Anthony Melton, who they got in the trade that brought them Josh Jackson, sent Korver and Jaron Carter, I think, to Phoenix. Basically, if you look at these guys, they're all younger. They're all very cheap. Melton is interesting because he's probably my favorite one of those guys so far, except for Clark, and he's going to be restricted for agents. So, like, he's probably going to get paid next year. But what they decided to do, what that front office decided to do around this core was like, look, we are going to target guys that we think, it seems like they specifically targeted guys to complement those guys, got them locked in on sort of cheaper contracts. So it sets them up to do something interesting next summer, where like, they have a bunch of money coming off the books. If they feel like they can overpay for a veteran that fits them, or like, they can do some stuff to take on salary or do whatever they want, they have the financial flexibility to bank on these young guys, build themselves with the young guys, and then have veterans in the books while these guys are still cheap, and then figure out the rest later. Like, John Morant will not be able to request, like, inevitably probably a max deal until 2023, 2024. Yeah. Jaren Jackson Jr. is a year before that. Until then, like, they're both going to be making under $10 million.
Yeah.
Brandon Clark is, like, a very good player. He will not make more than $3 million in a season until 2022, 2023. One of the things that we've seen teams like in the NFL do, for example, is you get a rookie quarterback and you spend on other stuff to support that quarterback while they're young and really cheap. And then you have to do sort of the inverse once they get really expensive. It's a little different in the NBA. The salary cap works differently and everything. But like, Memphis, like, seems to have done their own version of that. And while like, Ja is only making like 8.7, Jaren Jackson's only making like $7 million. While those guys are really cheap, they have all these other guys doing cheap, but it allows them to do other stuff. But they also just like went out and decided, we're gonna bet on trying to develop a bunch of young guys that we think can work. And like, D'Anthony Melton was like a really inspired choice. And like, yes, like, there's stuff about his game that we need to see if it works. It's a smallish sample size so far. But when I was writing about him, like, all of his underlying numbers make you think like, this guy's like a player, man. Like, he can defend, he moves the ball. Like, he's probably best served as like an off guard, but like, they found a rotation piece just by like eating the Josh Jackson contract, doing stuff like that and finding pieces that you think can fit your team. That are just disadvantaged assets in other places, I think a good thing. And you look at what they did with their two-way deals. Like, I can't speak to say that, like, Yuta Watanabe or John Concher are like good NBA players, but they targeted guys that I think they thought could contribute in some ways. And I think that is what you want to do with two-way deals. One of the things I don't think the Cavs have done well the last several years is like actually taking their two-way contracts as seriously as I think they should have, even dating back to LeBron. Like I could, like, I thought Lennon Perantes a really nice guy. I thought John Holland a very nice guy. I don't know why you were investing your two-way deals into at least one of those slots, not into someone you just wanted to really develop. That's why I thought like Billy Preston last year was like the kind of thing you want to roll the dice on. It's why I really like Dean Wade on a two-way deal. It's why, you know, I think that's what you need to do and try to find, not everything is going to hit, but I think you want to try to get as many hits as possible. And Memphis is like the example of how they've done that really well in really the last year.
No, I'd absolutely agree. Memphis is, I'm looking at their roster construction all overall, like really smart drafting. And I think, I don't want to be that guy, but the draft lottery luck also helped them a lot too, because they had the eighth best odds, or the best odds to get the eighth overall pick last summer. And then they jumped up to, was it second or third?
Jumped up to second because basically second, I remember the draft. So they obviously New Orleans wins, get Zion, they get second, and it was like within like a week of the draft letter, I think, where it was like they're taking Ja. Like they just knew, which is the right call, 100% the right call. He should be like he's probably not going to make the All-Star game, but he should be the conversation. The guy's incredible.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that's what I was getting like. And no, I think your point of doing like this NFL roster construction, because I think that's also the other difference is, a lot of these bad teams, and you can use the Rams after they hired Sean McVay, who kind of just tinkered and worked with Goff a little bit. He was the first overall pick, and then the Rams went all in, and they made the Super Bowl. And then if you have the Browns, who didn't have their season that the Rams did, obviously, but Baker had a supremely talented rookie season, and the Browns went all in on their personnel to try and build around that. And no, Memphis is doing the same exact thing, where they have good complementary pieces with like these young guys. And like you said, it's cheap and it's cost controlled going forward. And you don't have to worry about paying Ja, and you don't have to worry about paying Jaren Jackson till for a few more years down the line. And then for now you can have some fun with it and do it. And they have decent veterans. Like Kyle Anderson's been here in the league for 5 years, but he's a solid overall veteran. Solomon Hill is a solid overall veteran. Jay Crowder, even though wasn't great in Cleveland, he is doing okay in Memphis. Jonas Valanciunas, which is hard to believe. Him and Tristan have been in the league for, well, no, he came in a year after Tristan. But either way, they are from the same draft class. Like, Jonas is technically the second oldest player experience-wise on Memphis's roster. So they have young pieces, but they have good complementary veterans as well. And I think that's my problem, just the jump. Like, that's the other thing is with Atlanta, you look at their roster and their veterans are, well, Alan Crabb's no longer with them, so I guess it's Jeff Teague, Chandler Parsons, Evan Turner, and Vince Carter. And Vince Carter's the only veteran that can really hold clout in that locker room. And there's just a bunch of kids, and it's just like a bunch of awkwardly assembled pieces with some of those complimentary players. It's just, no, I'm super high on what, like, people like to talk about Atlanta's young foundation, and because Trey is a very exciting player to watch, but Ja's built up a lot of momentum and steam going into this point in his rookie campaign. I think Memphis is 41 games through at this point. Yes, they are. They're 41 games through at this point. They play Cleveland Friday, and no, they have just drafted really smart, intelligently, and they've taken good advantage, like you said, of these two-way deals, and they've just built a very solid team so that maybe this is what Cleveland's trying to do as well, is like they get enough complimentary and just good guys to build a foundation with that. When you happen to luck into a player like Ja Morant, you're ready to go and you can just pull that plug. And then people are saying like, oh, Cleveland is in this situation. If they happen to get the guy, they're fighting for a playoff spot next year. And the guy is just really elevating the rest of these younger players and his teammates and just making everything better. And we should talk more about Brandon Clark in the future. Cause,
very good player.
Very, very, very good player. And Memphis, we talked about this yesterday. It's incredible to think that Marc Gasol and Mike Conley were just there, and they've completely pulled the plug on that grit and grind era, but they're in such a good place, just rebuilding so efficiently and effectively that
the future looks really bright for Memphis. And I mean, hey, no, I'm a big fan of what they've done down there.
Yeah, I think that's right. The other thing I will say, and some of this could be where the Cavs have drafted, them not being too worried. Like, I think you could be too worried about fit early in the draft process, early in a renaissance of sorts. But I would say also, too, when you look at New Orleans, not so much because, like, Zion is the system. Like, to quote Jay-Z, I got to make sure I get this right so I, like, keep my any credibility I have as a rap fan. But, like... I'm not a businessman. I'm a business man. Like, that is what Zion is. And they obviously turned AD into other stuff that they're sort of going to see if it works around Zion or not. What I think Atlanta and Memphis both have also done, I don't know if it's worked with Atlanta yet, but I get the logic behind it. Like, they have a pick and roll partner for Trey. I was already there, but they've drafted like 3-and-D wings. They need some they're hoping those guys can turn into some kind of secondary creation. Memphis has drafted like D'Anthony Melton's like a really nice kind of backcourt kind of complement to Ja in a lot of ways, even though they haven't played a bunch together yet. Like, a Gurich kind of complements him. I think like Allen the shooter, like Clark is sort of the kind of dive rollman that's perfect for Jenkins' system and alongside what these guys are doing. I look at the Cavs roster and it's like, if you look at what they're doing, some of this is because of the veterans reading minutes and the overall kind of construction of the roster with some of the weirdness, like, just isn't there. But, I guess you could throw Exum in that court too. I think he's a guy I kind of forgot about, which I think would be fair if you wanted to put him in there. But I don't think it has like the vision yet. And as we kind of wrap up here, I think that's going to be one of the things to most watch the next couple of years is, how does Kobe Altman and that front office staff decide to sort of shape this and sort of shape the young core? What is their pivot point to being like, okay, we've got our guy, or if they don't get their guy, what is their sort of plan to sort of have everything kind of come together with a cohesive mess that next summer when they can have, like, as of right now, up to $26 million in cap space, could be more, could be less after the deadline. That'll be a really interesting time just to see like what the Cavs decide to do in terms of how they kind of complement everything that's out there and how that kind of compares to these other teams.
No, I'd agree. It's a weird time. Like, the Cavs roster is just, it's just weirdly constructed right now. Cause there's, like you said, I guess we should lump Dante into that young core, at least for this season and next year, depending on how things go with his just overall fit with the team. And for the most part, I think we might've jinxed him after he had that big night, but because he's just been, since then. But no, I don't know, it's just the Cavs are just like I hope they take more better advantage of their two-way deals. I think Dean Wade is a step in the right direction of that. Maybe Matt Mooney, who the Cavs just signed to a two-way deal, could also be another one of those players. You have to see what you get out of Dylan Windler to see if he's a nice another nice complimentary piece, or if this leg injury is just a premonition and a precaution of things that are to come, and that we're never really going to see him play to his full potential, which definitely sucks. And then you just kind of keep rolling the dice with a lot of these cripples, bastards, and broken things is what I like to call Dante Exum at this point. Even Marquise Chris last year, like, you see what you get with these guys, and if they stick and they mesh with you, keep them around and see what happens. But then there's also just veterans that I think the Cavs are just trying their damnedest to ship out of here to, one, recoup assets. And like you said, they have the salary cap space, and I think they're probably going to end up taking on a little bit of salary, maybe not a ton of it. But no, it's just, I'm interested to see what they're going to be doing going forward. But thankfully, there's a lot of good examples like Memphis and Atlanta and New Orleans as well. But New Orleans' situation is like just good luck on top of good luck on top of good luck, in my opinion, a little bit too, where they got the exact package they wanted for Anthony Davis, and then landing Zion just tipped the scales completely for them. But no, those are all good examples. And then, like I said, don't be like Sacramento. If you have the best player available, you can figure out fit later. And I think the Cavs don't need to worry about fit. And maybe they haven't because they've drafted 2 point guards of their top selections in the last 2 years. But it's definitely just, I'm interested to see how this roster construction goes. And I think this summer might be the first true indicator of what Kobe can do with building this team through the Renaissance era, quote unquote. Just because they're going to have a lot of money on the books to play with. And I don't think they're going to blow through all of it, but it'll be interesting to see what they do. Like, because either they could take the step to, like, say, they can reach their ceiling of like a 6th, 7th, 8th seed, or they keep just riding this renaissance. It's not a rebuild, it's a renaissance, out just to make sure that you can build a sustainable team that can eventually be an Eastern Conference title threat. But no, it's smart roster construction and a little bit of luck, and hopefully Cleveland can get a little bit of that draft magic again like they did a few years ago.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay, Evan, any kind of quick final thoughts as we get out of here?
No, Ja versus Darius is going to be a lot of fun on Friday night. Looking forward to seeing Darius go up against Kobe White and Colin Sexton maybe they'll have a nice little speed match with Kobe White on Saturday too. Should be a fun weekend. Glad the Cavs aren't on the West Coast anymore, and then they're back on Monday. And apparently the Cavs are selling tickets with Zion coming to town in a few weeks, so that'll be a lot of fun too. So looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, but for myself and for Evan, that's going to be just us for today's show. Find Evan on Twitter, as always, at and.evan. But now you're going to hear me talking to Mark King from Locked On Grizzlies, and then we'll see you again, guys, on Monday. Cheers. Joining me now is Mark King, host of the One Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Mark, how are you?
Yourself.
I'm doing good. So let's hop right in. You're covering a very fun basketball team. You're covering a team that is doing some really interesting stuff. And just with everything that's going on right in the playoff hunt, what has been the root cause of that from your perspective?
Ja Morant. I mean, he is honestly on another level. I mean, he is playing like I'm not sure a whole lot of rookies have done before, and so. You know, he has really elevated this team to a completely, just a whole other level. I mean, what he does on the court is nothing short of just, it's just fun to watch every night. I mean, he's very gifted at sharing the basketball, but has shown that he's able to score the basketball as well. So, you know, he's kind of really jump-started the timeline, if you will, for this Grizzlies team, what we thought would probably be a year where they didn't win a whole lot of games is kind of changes something quite different.
Has he exceeded your expectations, or like what has he? Was this what you expect? Like, what were you expecting from Ja? I mean, so early in his career, he comes in with more experience than some other guys, but is this about what you expected?
I mean, I was pretty high on Ja Morant even when he got drafted. I mean, I remember doing a Lockdown Grizzly show when he got drafted that, or when we even just got the number two pick, that I was just excited that the Grizzlies were going to have an opportunity to get Ja Morant. Now, I was probably higher on him than most people in this market, but, you know, his ability to pass the basketball and see the court, you know, it's always going to translate. Court vision and that kind of thing is virtually translatable from every level of basketball. What the question marks were is his ability to score, his ability to get to the rim, his ability to shoot the basketball well. Those all things have surpassed me, my expectations by far. And his ability to adapt to the NBA game this quickly has definitely surpassed, I think, everybody's expectations. We expected Ja Morant to be this good, this quick. You know, that's just not true. I mean, he's been extremely good, doing things that, you know, a lot of rookies have never done. If you look at his fourth quarter scoring and where he really comes alive, I mean, he's up there with, you know, NBA superstars in terms of how much he scores in the league. I think, you know, him and James Harden are top five, six, or seven in that area of fourth quarter scoring. So it's not just on a rookie level what he's doing, it's just on an all-NBA level.
What else has really fueled this season? Like, is it Jaren Jackson Jr.? Is it hitting on guys like Brandon Clark and D'Anthony Melton? Like, what is it that had, in your mind, that has really kind of fueled what has been so successful for this group this year?
Yeah, I think a lot of people talk about Jaren Jackson Jr. We all talk about Brandon Clark, but something that we don't talk about a lot in this market, and maybe just overall that isn't getting probably as much conversation as it is Taylor Jenkins. His offense and his coaching style has really has catapulted this team into a totally different level. I mean, he is, you know, he's all about pace and space. It's all about shooting three ball. I mean, they shoot and take a lot of threes all the time. Like, he's not a big turnover guy. He understands that as fast as they're playing in terms of pace, you know, that's going to happen. And so I don't think that gets talked about enough is that what Taylor Jenkins has done to install this offense. I mean, Jaren Jackson Jr. is a prime example of that, because last year he took almost hardly any threes. And this year he is out here shooting 44% from three. Like, he's an elite shooter right now. He's doing, like, coming off screens and just shooting stuff that, you know, shooting guard shoot. I mean, you're 6'11 power forward. So, like, that's a prime example. I mean, Jaren Jackson Jr. doesn't do that and isn't having this kind of year without Taylor Jenkins' offense. I mean, that's, I think, just doesn't get enough love as it should, and Taylor himself doesn't get enough credit as he should to putting this offense in place for guys to succeed like Ja Morant and Brandon Clark, like you mentioned. Brandon Clark has easily become, you know, one of the perennial favorites in this market just because he's so efficient. He's so much fun to watch. I mean, you know, the two biggest things for this franchise that have turned it around in probably, you know, just 2 months last year. You look at, they got a new front office, hired a new front office staff, new general manager. They hired a new coach, Taylor Jenkins. And then you get lucky and get the number two pick. And, you know, those two things, Taylor Jenkins and the front office staff, have totally changed this franchise around.
When you look at this game on Friday, Cavs-Grizzlies in Memphis, what are just some of the things going on with the Grizzlies right now or in this matchup that you're just kind of, in particular, kind of looking forward to seeing how they play out?
You know, I'm always interested in what Kevin Love's going to do these days. I mean, that seems to be just the story, just from an outsider's perspective of the Cavs. We're going to do a preview show on Locked On Grizzlies of Cavs Grizzlies on Friday tomorrow. So, you know, I'll get into a little bit more of the analytics side of things and how the Grizzlies match up. But that's always for me, from an outsider perspective, is just how that plays out. That's always fun to watch. But you know, it's a game. But honestly, you would expect, I think, the Grizzlies to win. But you know, the Grizzlies are ultimately still, I don't know if they're there talent wise where they're gonna, you know, ultimately need to be really be good and perennial playoff contenders. And I think they know that too. And so, you know, you always have that chance of a letdown. And I think people would view that game as a letdown, but I don't know if it would be in the end.
What is something that you would say is there something that a team is coming in to try and beat Memphis? Are there things just in what they do or don't do that you think a team could look to capitalize on, just on in a basis in an effort to try and pick up a win on the road in Memphis?
Yeah, so the biggest thing for the Grizzlies is, you know, what teams have done over the past few weeks that has seemed to work is Ja Morant is to guard him with bigger wings. He's kind of struggled with that in the sense of, you know, he was really dominating point guard matchups early on in the season, and then a lot of teams swapped to, you know, having a two or three kind of a bigger, longer wing guard him, and that seemed to work pretty well to bottle him up. And that's one of the big things that's really trying to slow him down, which is, it's proven difficult, but that's one of the biggest things for the Grizzlies. When, if Ja Morant's going, this team is kind of going. So if you can kind of bottle him up, you can really have a chance to do some damage. The other thing is just slowing him down. The Grizzlies play at a really, really fast pace. And so the more you slow them down in the half-court offense, the tougher it is for them to score. This offense relies on early shot possessions and fast break offense and running up and down the court. So the more that you can limit those things and slow them down and put them in a half court offense, the more they struggle.
Mark, just give everyone a plug about everything you have going on and where they can find you online.
Yeah, so everybody guys can find me on Twitter at King_producer. Obviously, Locked On Grizzlies does a great job. We do. We have an Andre Iguodala trade special out right now. It's a two-part special. It's you hear from basically myself about 8 different trades for Andre Iguodala, and then a bunch of Locked On hosts throughout the across the country that cover the team. So that's out right now. We also have daily episodes. We have preview episodes. So you can follow the show at Locked On Grizz on Twitter as well. So yeah, Ja Morant's fun to watch, and that seems like the topic of a lot of our shows these days.
Yeah, Ja Morant, very, very fun. Can confirm that. Also, I quite like D'Anthony Melton. Big fan of just
D'Anthony Melton's a player. He's a real player in this league for sure.
Yeah, I was looking at his numbers and like the stuff he does that like doesn't seem like it shows up in a box score is just like exactly what you seem like you'd want around Ja. I just love the way Memphis is building on. It's probably my favorite young building situation right now. Something we're talking about on this episode of Locked On Cavs with myself and my co-host Evan. But find Mark, follow everything he does. And Mark, thank you so much for coming on.
I appreciate it, man. Anytime.
Thanks again to Mark for coming on and talking about the Grizzlies and Ja Morant and everything going on with that team. Again, Evan and I will be going to be back on Monday. Enjoy the games this weekend, and we'll talk to you then.